technology increasingly affecting every aspect of our lives, it's important to understand how it affects us psychologically. Welcome to the Psychology of Technology podcast, where we look at how humans and machines collide. And welcome to the Psychology of Technology podcast with me, Kareem Tawansi.
And hi, Brett Raven.
And today is a very special occasion for us because we have on our show our very first guest, Jamie Crick. Jamie has worked in the digital marketing space since 99, starting with DoubleClick in Dublin and then moving to Australia in the early 2000s. He's since worked for Telstra and co-founded a social video advertising and creative business and led content distribution for the creative agency Emotive. Earlier this year, he was appointed local chief of the global entertainment and marketing agency Allied Global Marketing. Hello, Jamie, and welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's fantastic to have you along. So today, I wanted to talk a little bit about video on demand subscriptions, or VOD, as they like to call them. It's something that I've been giving a lot of thought to as I've signed up to more and more video on demand systems. I think I counted 7 the other day, and it's started me thinking about this disrupted industry needs to be disrupted again, because it seems like we have far too many to choose from and far too much work to manage them all. And so some of my thoughts are, as a user, really only want to be thinking about the content that I'm getting as opposed to all the systems I have to use to get to that content. And I certainly don't want to be thinking about all the different people I have to be paying money to. Ideally, it would have just come in one account and looked after it behind the scenes. I mean, ultimately, my interest is in the content, not in the platform providers. But having said that, I know that I may be alone in my thinking. So just over to you, Brett. I was wondering what your thoughts on this are.
You've made the right point that this industry has been disrupted by quite a few players lately, and it seems to be adding on every time we turn a corner. I know Jamie has one to talk about as well, a recent foray into the market. I think this is a natural thing though, right? I think we were really chomping at the bit as consumers for a long time to have access to content on an on-demand basis. And, you know, remember the days when we would coercively download videos to try and watch them because we had to wait 2 or 3 years before the licensing caught up in Australia. And now we have it all on demand. It's all at our hands and fingertips. And, you know, we've got to this point now where content's available and now we have to deal with lots of different producers. And I think there's a bit of a natural process here that's happening around, you know, when you disintermediate production from distribution and people can go direct to consumer, you've got an open channel that means that everybody comes to the market as fast as they possibly can to try and, you know, make as much margin as they can. But I'm really interested to know, Jamie, what do you think about where we're at right now with the plethora of choice and different content providers and the platforms and the billing that we have right now? I know you've got some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the one hand, I think most people would say they don't want to go back to, at least those people who have cancelled their subscriptions, they don't want to go back to Foxtel being the only choice, where they were paying upwards of $150 a month to ostensibly get, in quotes, everything. But at the same time, yeah, no, there are new SVODs, or subscription video on demand services, launching more and more regularly, it seems. And that is starting to add up for people. I read a stat the other day, I think I'm crediting it right to Nielsen, that the average Australian budgets $50 a month for streaming video services, but is actually paying $55. And that presumably is going up. So there is a bit of a disconnect there, and people are potentially getting to the limits of what they want to pay for. But again, having said that, people were paying $150 a few years ago to Foxtel, maybe begrudgingly, but there's still a big delta between the two.
So do you know why content ends up on different platforms? So something will start on Netflix and then it'll suddenly end up being on BritBox or it's on Stan.
Well, I think essentially, and I don't know all the ins and outs of this, but essentially, if you have a direct route to the consumer, you're just sharing the revenue fewer ways. It's an expensive enterprise producing premium content. And if you can get straight to the consumer and cut out as many middlemen as possible, then why wouldn't you?
I mean, that probably makes sense for Netflix, what do they call them, Netflix originals, etc. But I'm assuming it's sort of multiple bites of the cherry. So if you have it on different platforms, you've got more people likely to consume it. Although I don't know what the model is with regards to how they distribute revenue based on the number of plays. I know with Spotify, the artists get something per play, I think, if I understand that correctly.
That's correct. I think it's based on 30 seconds of listening of a track, and that's what triggers it. But I think it's actually a little bit different in the streaming world, because if it's not an original piece of content that you as the streamer have commissioned or made yourself, then you're paying for it on a license basis. You know, there are reports that Netflix are paying something like $500 million to have Seinfeld for however many years they've licensed it for. That's just a flat cost to them. Whether or not anybody watches uses it. Jerry Seinfeld's going to do very well out of this.
I also think that there are different layers of licensing. So in Australia, if you're competing for the Jerry Seinfeld show, for example, and you want exclusive rights to it because you want people to migrate over to your platform and pay that extra fee because you're the only place you can get it in Australia, then that's probably a higher cost of licensing. But then if there's multiple places where you can watch Seinfeld, you know, it's more of a shared model where anybody can kind of have the license as long as they hit the minimum bid.
Certainly, yeah, you pay more for exclusivity.
Yeah, yep.
So what's your view on the concept of the multiple platforms? Because what I think I find very frustrating is having to deal with the Netflix interface, which in itself is frustrating because it's not as logical as you think it could be. And that's obviously for revenue generation purposes. But I don't necessarily want to be learning multiple platform interfaces. Surely that's something that will be addressed as a challenge over time.
Yes. I mean, there are some platforms are a lot more intuitive than others, whether it's in how they present content to you, organize it, and how well they're simple things like scrubbing work. I mean, it still amazes me that there are certain platforms where if you just want to rewind a little bit, it's incredibly difficult. It blows my mind. But I think possibly what you're getting at is the organization of that content and services like Apple TV or now Amazon Prime Video and Google TV, where no matter who you're subscribed to, it's gonna pull it all together for you in one place so you can get to it easily. There's that side, but then there's also, you know, is there going to be some convergence of some of these players as well? And I think the thinking is that that's bound to happen. There's going to be some merging happening because there are just so many of them and the cost to market is relatively low.
I wonder how that'll work though, Jamie. I think if you look at somebody like Paramount or Netflix or Stan or whoever it is, and they're starting to produce their own content now, part of the reason why they are running on their own platform is they want to provide their own experience, their own brand wrapped around the content and the services they provide. So I'd be really interested to know what you think about, you know, if we try and consolidate down from 10 or 15 to 5 or 6, wouldn't that wash out the brand experience that some of these direct-to-consumer producers are trying to achieve? Or do you think maybe that's not going to be as much of an issue once we get to a certain saturation point in the market?
It's a good question. I honestly don't really know the answer. I mean, I think some of them are more invested in their brands than others. I think some of them are more invested in their content than their brands, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that be the logical place to invest your brand in the content rather than the delivery?
You know, I think they like to think they can walk and chew gum. Honestly, I don't know. I think that they don't all have the same strategy, obviously, and they don't all have the same priorities.
So you were recently involved with a release of a new player in our market. That was an interesting one because they've come without a platform. Do I understand correctly?
For the moment, at least, yes. So we've helped to launch AMC Plus in Australia, which is for the moment available just through Apple TV and Amazon's new Prime Video channels, which is something I referenced earlier, which helps to collect lots of SVODs in one place under where you can actually subscribe through one interface, the Amazon interface.
Right. So it's not necessarily a long-term strategy. It's just not it's the way they've chosen to launch into this market.
I wouldn't say it's a short-term strategy. It's a route to market. And I don't want to speak for them, but you know, it's a route to market alongside other ones such as direct to consumer. Having access to the user base of a Prime Video is obviously brings its own advantages, as does going direct to consumer.
See, what's interesting about all this is I remember when music was moving to digital, and obviously in the late 90s it was more about people ripping CDs, etc. And then the whole idea of online music started. When was Spotify launched? 2007, I think. Whenever it was, anyway, that Spotify seemed to have solved the problem. If I want music, I just go Spotify and I'll get the music. Just there might be the occasional exception, but basically it's just there and one interface and one billing system. I just wonder how long it's going to be before the consumers demand the same of the vision industry, because it just seems really clunky. And at the moment, the providers have all the leverage, it seems, but what I've noticed with technology over time is eventually the market will find a way around it, at least for a period of time.
Yeah, I know why it's tempting to think of them as equivalents. And, you know, it would be nice to know that I could choose the video equivalent of Spotify or iTunes, Apple Music, I should say, and just have access to all the music from either of them and pay basically the same price. And there was a while when the record companies were trying to build their own as well. And I think, you know, and they didn't work out, because I think something you have to consider is that the relationship between the artist and the fan is quite different to the relationship between a TV show and a fan. If you're a fan of, I was going to say Michael Jackson is a bad example. Like, let's say if you're a fan of Queen, you're probably going to be a fan of Queen for life. You may be a huge fan of Breaking Bad, but you'll watch it through once, maybe twice, maybe three times at most. And also the other factor is the relative cost of producing an album versus a TV show is very different.
I was going to say, you raised some really good points. It is a different experience and the cost basis is quite different across the two. So that's not something I've thought about prior to this point. I do wonder, though, could the future look something like you can choose your platform and it'll give you access to all the content and there will be some form of billing, possibly a billing middleman, if that's politically correct, and then it simplifies the whole thing. It may go that way. I don't know. Although my observations of what's happening in the States is it's probably going the other way at the moment.
Or perhaps even you pay for what you consume.
Or pay for what you consume, yeah. And imagine a platform that was open source so you could build your own interface. That would be amazing.
I think the platform is less of the issue now, right? I think it's almost commoditized. Any one of these groups can, you know, turn up and probably white label the video and delivery process and the billing process and so on. I think those points of differentiation will wash out. And like you said, Kareem, every user experience is different, right? The skip intro button is in a different spot or, you know, as you say, Jamie, you can't scrub forward or backward easily. I kind of suspect what will happen is when you look at the experience in Google TV, for example, where there are still apps, they are branded as those different providers. They are a different user experience. I think maybe those will start to meld together from a UI perspective a little bit because there's less of a threat of differentiation on those platforms. And I would also bet that the likes of Google will start doing the single billing on behalf of, right? So you pay your Google, you know, monthly fee and it will include your Stan subscription, your Apple subscription, whatever apps that they provide on that. I think that's probably where it's going to go. And that would be a huge thing for Google. You could imagine the clip of the ticket they could take if they really bedded that down. I just don't know what kind of resistance they would get from the market at this stage.
So Jamie, as we look to the future, what do you think the whole VOD industry is going to look like in about 3 years' time?
I think there will be some consolidation. I think you might start seeing AVOD platforms getting a bit more traction. So those that are supported by advertising rather than subscriptions or even hybrid versions, which I believe Hulu is in the US, could be wrong, where you can either pay a nominal amount and get advertising or you pay the full subscription and you don't get any advertising. And there are obviously models like Tubi here in Australia and in other markets where you don't pay anything, but you get ads. So I think there's going to be horses for courses, but I think you're seeing some consolidation already with the likes of Amazon buying MGM, you know, to try and shore up some of that exclusivity. There's no one answer, but it's going to be really interesting over the next few years.
It's a good point. I think you might be hitting onto something that there, Jamie. Consolidation may not come from the platform level, but rather from the producer's level. So studios buying each other is probably where it's going to happen, right?
And the one thing that I haven't thrown into this, and we're running out of time, so it's probably something for another time, is when we start integrating augmented and virtual reality into our, let's call it movie experiences. And then that's probably going to attract a whole bunch of other tech and then possibly different business models.
So you're squeezing the metaverse into the last 30 seconds of this podcast.
Yeah, well, or maybe I'm starting the basis of the next podcast. With that, I want to thank you both. Thanks very much, Jamie, for joining us today. It's been very enlightening discussing the ups and downs, the ins and outs of the VOD industry. And once again, thank you to Mr. Brett Raven for all your marvelous wisdom.
Thanks, sir.
And I will catch you guys again soon.